Hi there, this is Lilia Chews of Four Leg Rehab Incorporated, your place for online canine rehab education. So in today's training audio, I wanted to delve down a path that is something that I've been very interested in personally for my own health and my family's health. And so I got thinking, well, I wonder what is out there, in regards to dogs. So specifically, I wanted to look at gut microbiota. Microbiota. I actually watched a video. The majority of people call it microbiota. Anyways, so we know that it can, you know, have an effect not only on the GI system, but it's really becoming very big now on the human side, how much it can have an impact on health in general. So there's a lot that talks about the gut-brain connection. And I was watching a video, and what was interesting is the PhD guy who was giving the talk was talking about how he got introduced to it, was this practitioner who was looking at him and talking to him about his gut health and how that could be impacting his back pain. And sure enough, he changed his diet and the back pain went away. Now, it's not like he was overweight or anything, but that got me thinking, I wonder what's out there in the literature that talks about gut microbiota and musculoskeletal health. So, this is the topic we're on. So, I hopped onto PubMed, and I first started off in the human side, right? Because that's where we're going to find most of our information. So, on the human side, I found an article by Biver et al. 2019 in Aging Research and Rev. What would that? Aging Res Rev. Rev. Okay, well, I should have looked up what that stood for. Anyways, what that study was looking at is they said that basically physical inactivity and diets low in fiber and rich in sugar and saturated fats can promote chronic low-grade inflammation and obesity. We know that. Adverse alterations of the gut microbiota composition called microbial dysbiosis, and that basically term is meaning an imbalance or maladaptation, may favor metabolic syndrome and inflammation. So two important components of osteoarthritis onset and evolution. So they're saying that when you have an imbalance of your gut bacteria, that this can cause inflammation and metabolic syndrome, and we know that there's a correlation between that and osteoarthritis. So this paper was actually the consensus of a working group. It was called Gut Microbiota and Osteoarthritis Management, an expert consensus of the European Society for Clinical and Economic Aspects for Osteoarthritis, Osteoporosis, and Musculoskeletal Diseases. So essentially, this expert working group was convened to talk about this topic and to review the potential contributions of gut microbiota to osteoarthritis. And essentially, they figured that such a contribution is supported by observational or dietary intervention studies in animal models of osteoarthritis and in humans. In addition, several well-recognized risk factors of osteoarthritis interact with the gut microbiota. Lastly, gut microbiota is a clinical determinant of drug metabolism and bioavailability and may influence the response of osteoarthritis medications. So the bottom line was that they thought it had an impact. They thought it was something that should be looked into and had a contribution to osteoarthritis. So then the next paper that I dove into was Lorenzo et al. In the Journal of Clinical Medicine 2019, and it was about oral gut microbiota and osteoarthritis. Is there an evidence-based axis? And so basically, the link between gut oral microbiota and joint inflammation in animal models of arthritis has been established, which is great because dogs are animals. And yes, we realize that most of that is rat studies, but if the humans are looking at the rat studies to decide what to do for humans, why can't we look at that for dogs? Anyways, my soapbox down. And it is now receiving increased attention in human studies. Recent papers have demonstrated substantial alterations in the gut and oral microbiota in patients with rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. These alterations resemble those established in systemic inflammatory conditions such as inflammatory bowel disease, spondyloarthritides, and psoriasis, which may decrease microbial diversity and a disturbance of immunoregulatory properties. The changes and decreased diversity of oral and gut microbiota seems to play an important role in the etiopathogenesis. So I would have, basically they're saying it may have some role to play in both the cause as well as the subsequent development of rheumatoid arthritis and osteoarthritis. So within the paper, within their discussion and conclusion, they quote it here, there is a justified association between oral and gut microbiomes in arthritis, although the current evidence that the microbiome causes arthritis is far from conclusive. Strategic future studies aiming to improve the understanding of the combined role of gut-oral axis in arthritis, as well as the use of microbiome influencers such as probiotics, is mandatory. So, yes, basically, these are ones that are saying, yep, we are thinking that there is a connection. We think it's important, but there needs to be more studies. So let's hop to the animal studies. So we have one by Schott et al., JCI Insight, a 2018 paper, and it was entitled Targeting the Gut Microbiome to treat the osteoarthritis of obesity. Okay. So, study was based on the pretense that oligofructose supplementation restores the lean gut microbiome in obese mice. Okay, so a few things there. So they basically, what has been noted is that the microbiome in lean mice is different than the microbiome in obese mice. And I know there's been talk, like, if you can put the microbiome of a lean mouse into an obese mouse, you can change that. Because it has been shown if you put the microbiome of a obese mouse into a lean mouse, you can make the lean mouse fat. Okay. So they wanted to see if oligofructose supplementation restored the microbiome. Okay, to that of a lean mouse. So let's talk about oligofructose. It's just fun to say oligofructose for oligofructose. Now, it is a subgroup of inulin, and inulin and oligofructose are not digested in the upper gastrointestinal tract. Therefore, they have reduced caloric value, and they stimulate the growth of intestinal bifidobacteria. Okay, so this is what we would call a prebiotic. It is a food or something that you can ingest that stimulates the growth of bacteria. So it's not like you're adding a probiotic, which is adding the bacteria. It's adding a substance that bacteria can grow on, I suppose. Okay, so their study, they used mice, and the mice groups were either fed a low-fat diet, these were the controls, or a high-fat diet for 12 weeks. They had to make them fat, right? Then the groups were divided further and either fed control fiber or the oligofructose for 2 weeks, okay? Then they had surgery to impact their medial meniscus of one leg. So they were basically trying to induce arthritis. They had sham surgery on the other leg, so the meniscus was left fine. And they were then sacrificed 12 weeks later for testing. So essentially what they found in this study is that oligofructose does not prevent obesity in mice consuming high-fat diets. Okay, so, well, you eat high-fat diet, you will still become fat, even with oligofructose. They did find that the oligofructose reverses the effect of obesity on the gut microbiome. That's amazing. So if they actually stop, if you cared about these mice being alive, then you could say, well, if you stop the high-fat diet, you put in the oligofructose, then you could make them unfat. Okay. Oligofructose supplemented obese mice have reduced systemic inflammation. So the oligofructose reduced inflammation overall. Next one, obesity-associated macrophage migration to the synovium is reduced in oligofructose-supplemented mice. Excellent. Oligofructose prevents cartilage loss in the OA of obesity. And lastly, oligofructose suppresses obesity-induced molecular, cellular, and joint structure changes in the context of injury. So basically, all of these are associated with a reduced inflammation in the colon, circulation, and the knee, and may serve as protection from osteoarthritis, they also reported that compared with the lean rat gut, obesity is associated with a loss of the beneficial bifidobacteria, while key pro-inflammatory species gain in abundance. Okay, so as much as we say, okay, well, you should, your dog has a knee surgery, and I tell those people, put your dog on a supplement, and it will be on a supplement forever. You could also say, put them on a prebiotic or this oligofructose or some inulin as a supplement, and that might also reduce the irritation inflammation in the joint. I look at this and go, oh my gosh, this has so many potential implications for us. I think it's important to know. Okay, next. So the next one is Steve's et al. It's a review, The Microbiome and Musculoskeletal Conditions of Aging, a review of evidence for impact and potential therapeutics. And it is Bone Mineral Research Journal, 2016. Now, the gut microbiome provides an attractive target for therapeutic intervention because it may be manipulated relatively easily. So a method of altering the microbiome is through the use of pro and prebiotics. A probiotic is a living organism found in food and dietary supplements that may improve the health of the host beyond its inherent basic nutritional content, right? That's the probiotics that you buy in the store, and the good ones are usually in the fridge section. Prebiotics are ingredients in fruit and vegetables, such as complex carbohydrate fibers that alter the composition or activity of the microbiome in a way that may confer health benefits to the host. Okay. So interestingly, this review paper, and it had various animal studies, so I'm getting to the canine, but interestingly, it noted that glucosamine is a candidate prebiotic. Oh, interesting. And it cited an animal model study in rats whereby Lactobacillus casei, which is a probiotic, was given in conjunction with glucosamine and collagen. And the combination appeared to have a synergistic action with the collagen and glucosamine, effectively reducing pain, cartilage destruction, and lymphocyte infiltration more than the treatment with the glucosamine and the collagen together or separately. So it can further benefit what you might already be prescribing. Similar studies on probiotics on collagen-induced arthritis in rats, which is basically how they replicate rheumatoid arthritis in animal studies. Collagen-induced. Interesting. I don't know what they do. have produced results comparable to those of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, suggesting that, irrespective of the underlying mechanism of joint inflammation, probiotics may be beneficial. Oh, super cool. Okay, so where this study went to on canine, unfortunately, there really was nothing canine that looked at probiotics or prebiotics in osteoarthritis. So studies have looked at probiotics and gastrointestinal disease for irritable bowel or inflammatory bowel disease. So perhaps if we know what works for the GI system, then we might also take those or understand what worked for the GI and assume that it could benefit the musculoskeletal system as well, as was seen in the rat studies and what the human studies are thinking. So let's see what's out there for probiotics in dogs as it relates to inflammatory bowel disease. So first one, the probiotic effect of mucosal bacteria is similar to that of inflammatory bowel disease dogs receiving standard dietary treatment. Inflammatory bowel disease dogs fed probiotics may have beneficial effects on mucosal homeostasis. So they compared dogs that were fed the dietary version and those that had dietary treatment for irritable bowel, and they one group, they also added probiotics. They thought it would have a beneficial effect. Their study numbers were too low and they had too many to drop out. So I will tell you that in that study, it was both dogs groups did well. The dogs that were fed the probiotics did better, but it didn't end up being statistically significant because they didn't have the numbers. And that was White et al. 2017 Gut Microbes Journal. So number two, there is an interest in using probiotics such as Lactobacillus species to control canine intestinal infections. So Lactobacillus reuteri, AI, proved to be the best probiotic candidate to use as a supplement in dogs. So that was Komen et al. 2019 Journal of Applied Microbiology. The third study, a double-blinded study that researched the giving of probiotics in sour milk formula to dogs with acute diarrhea, found that the specific probiotic combination used had a normalizing effect on acute diarrhea, which was additionally associated with the decreased number of potential pathogens, right? So there was a reduced number of Clostridium and Enterococcus bacterium. And the probiotic strains used in the study were canine-derived Lactobacillus SP probiotics in combination of Lactobacillus fermentum vet 9A, Lactobacillus rhamnosus vet 16A, and Lactobacillus plantarum vet 14A. So that paper was done by Gomez Gallego et al. 2016 in Veterinary Microbiology. Paper number four. This is an interesting one too. Elderly dogs fed a probiotic feed additive that included Lactobacillus casei Zhang, Lactobacillus plantarum P8, and Bifidobacterium animalis subspecies lactis V9. Significantly improved average daily food intake and weight gain, and had blood serum markers suggested of improving health and immunity. So the old dogs, it actually helped them feel better, eat better, and then it seemed to help with their blood serum markers that showed reduced inflammation and such. Interesting. Okay, that was Zhu et al., XU, Zhu et al., 2019 Frontiers in Immunology. Paper number five is a 2016 study reviewed the canine intestinal microbiota and, basically, there we go. So what they found is in regards to microbial organisms commercially used as probiotics in dogs in Europe, they noted the following. And so I quote this. To date, 4 bacterial strains or products have been examined by the European Food Safety Authority for their safety and efficacy as probiotics to feed additives in dogs. This includes 2 Enterococcus faecium strains, Enterococcus faecium NCIB 10415 E1705. Enterococcus faecium NCIMB 10415 E1707, you know, because you're going to want to repeat that. And also Lactobacillus acidophilus. Yay, we can buy that over the shelf. DSM 1324125 and Bifidobacterium species animalis. Other bacterial strains available as over-the-counter supplements for dogs contain different strains of lactobacilli, bifidobacterium, bactis subtilis, or coagulans, in some cases yeast, and others fungi. However, limited data are available about the safety and efficacy of these microorganism products or the health claims associated with them. And that was Schmidt and Sukodolsky, 2016, in Vet Med Science. Okay. So then I thought, well, what about prebiotics, right? Is there anything out there in the literature? And it was like, less. I found one paper. And so in that paper, one study looked at a 180-day trial of supplement containing chondroitin sulfate and prebiotics, which was a resistant starch beta-glucans and manna oligosaccharides. This diet was developed to target intestinal inflammation and oxidative stress and restore normal biosis without exhibiting any side effects. And it was utilized on 27 dogs with inflammatory bowel disease in addition to a hydrolyzed diet and compared with placebo. And after treatment, a significant decrease in histologic scores was seen only in the supplement group. And they said, our results suggest a beneficial effect of long-term oral administration of a dietary supplement containing chondroitin sulfate and prebiotics combined with a hydrolyzed diet in dogs with inflammatory bowel disease by improving markers of inflammation, oxidative stress, and cholesterol in dogs with inflammatory bowel disease. So basically, both groups improved, but the supplement group improved. But again, this one was non-statistically more so. They needed more dogs in their study too. And that was Segura et al., 2016, BMC Veterinary Research. Whew. So the one thing I wanted to talk about a little bit, because I think we all as health practitioners understand what a probiotic is, but I just want to talk a little bit about prebiotics and specifically prebiotic foods. And I found a listing of them. There are things on here like onions and leeks and dark chocolate, which obviously are not things that you would feed to a dog. But perhaps, you know, things that we should pay attention to would be artichokes, radishes, carrots, cucumbers, asparagus, bell peppers, jicama, beets, yams, some garlic, daikon radish, dandelion greens, chicory root, sweet potatoes, cabbage, tomatoes, apples, berries, bananas, mango, other sources, honey, coconut flour, flax seed, hemp seed, pumpkin seed, chia seed, legumes, quinoa, wild rice, and ginger root. So just throwing that out there, that especially if you were to have an owner who is making food, that to understand that including some of these types of foods are good in that it helps, in that they are prebiotics and can help with the gut microbiota. Whew. Alrighty, words I don't say every day. Anyway, so essentially as a conclusion, I was super excited looking up all this stuff. And I would say that this is something that I am very much interested in personally and for my family, and something I would consider for my own dog and potentially advocate for to my clients and their dogs. I think these supplements and or food choices have the potential to positively impact not only digestive health, but other aspects of health as well. So indeed, more research is needed, but I do think that there is enough available evidence to point towards the potential for probiotics and prebiotics to have a place in musculoskeletal healthcare. So interesting. Hope you found that interesting too. And I guess on that note, until next time, cheers.